Our last storyteller of the evening is Brandy Tomhave, and she is a jammer for the Charm City Roller Girls, which is some kind of aggressive fighting position on skates. And she's also a lobbyist in Washington, but she's really sweet. And so please welcome Brandy.
All right. So I'm at a conference in Tulsa when my phone rings. It's a call from a woman I barely know, a distant cousin from California, who says, "Brandy, if you ever want to know your father, you better get out here now, because he's dying of lung cancer." Oh my God, I hate my father. I don't know him. He's never been in my life. The only thing I know about him, I know from my mom. I know that they met at the University of Arizona in Tucson, got knocked up, eloped to Vegas, and then went home to Sacramento to slug it out for 6 months while they waited for me to be born. And when my mom went into labor, my father drove her to the hospital, came to a rolling stop, let her out, and kept on going. To my aunt's house, because while my mom was having me, my father was having her sister. Oh, yeah. So now I realize after this phone call, this is my one and only shot of confronting him and getting answers and maybe forgiving him, but I've never really been that big into forgiveness because I kind of think it's for quitters, you know. For people who don't have the endurance that a real grudge requires. But I go. The next day, I'm at the Sacramento airport descending the escalator into baggage claim when I see this little man standing behind this giant bouquet of red roses. And he's gazing up at me. And his first words to me are, "I love you." And I'm like, wait, what? I don't know if I can even work my way up to like, but I'm willing to try. So the next day I drive both of us to Half Moon Bay, where they grow pumpkins along the Pacific Ocean. It's October. I went there once as a kid. I want to share that with him. And I've got it in my mind that the perfect place for a heart-to-heart is a pumpkin patch. Except by the time we arrive, it's already dark. So I pull into the hotel. I go into register. And by the time I return, my father is standing alone in the parking lot with his hands on his knees, gasping for breath. He's ashen and he's afraid, and I'm afraid too, because as I look at this man struggling to breathe, I realize that tonight I am responsible for the man who refused to ever be responsible for me. So I race him to Stanford Hospital. The whole time, I tell him, "It's okay. It's okay. It's okay." And it was. We got there. We spent the night together in the emergency room, behind the curtains, just me and my father and the guy in the bed next to us. Yeah. He's a meth head. And he cannot stop pleasuring himself all night long. And my father and I both think this is hilarious. And my father has an oxygen mask strapped to his face, so he can't speak. But I hold his hand all night, and we laugh, and we laugh. And you know, the great thing about laughter is that it's so intimate. And it requires no explanation. By the morning, he's stable enough to be transferred to Sacramento. And I tailgate his ambulance the whole way there. And I am praying, "God, please don't let him die yet. I just got here. And so when we get to the hospital, they take him off, and I go to get coffee, freshen up, and to find his beautiful wife, Susan, who is consulting with his oncologist in a waiting room. It's decided that he'll start his first chemo treatment in the morning. So I go then to find him. I go by myself. What I discover when I enter his room is my father laying there with a rather large woman straddling him, riding him like a mechanical bull. And he says to me, "Oh, hey, honey, this is my girlfriend." Yeah, right? And I'm so pissed off. I think, why do you have to ruin everything? So I walk out, and I don't come back till the morning. But I sit beside him, and I hold his hand for the first chemo treatment and every treatment he has that week. And in fact, I never left his room. I stayed there with him and held his hand, and I listened to him until towards the end of the week. I finally worked up my nerve to ask him what I had always wondered. And that is, why did you leave and why didn't you ever come back to look for me? And he said, because your mother kidnapped you and I could never find you. And that was crazy to me because I grew up terrified of my father. My mother always told me, be careful. If Steve ever gets half a chance, he'll kidnap you to hurt me. And that's when I realized, oh my God, they both have their own stories. And neither of them have anything to do with me. But now, after this week with him, I've got my own story about my father. I have my own truth. So at the end of the week when he was discharged, I wanted to celebrate that. And the fact that he came through chemo like a cockroach. Like, nothing phases this guy. Nothing. So his wife, Susan, is a good sport. And she's like, yeah, you can throw him a party. Their friends are shocked to get the invitation. Most of them know that he's got cancer, but none of them know that he's got a daughter. So I prepare for the party, and I'm selecting the music. And there's not much to choose from. It's all Beatles. I ask Susan, what's the deal? And she's like, I don't know. It's the only thing he'll listen to. It's the Beatles are the only thing anyone is allowed to play in our home. And I asked my father about that. I said, what is up with you? And he said, in October of 1963, when your mother and I were driving from University of Arizona, Tucson, through the desert to go break it to our families that we were going to have a baby and we just dropped out of college, the Beatles had just broken. And the only song playing on any radio station was, I Want to Hold Your Hand. And that's when I realized that my birth scratched my father's record. And he got stuck out there in the desert, you know? And that record just kept playing over and over and over again. And so I needed to pick his needle up so that we could both move forward. That night, after their living room became crowded with old hippies and New Agers because it's Northern California, I asked my father to dance. And as we threaded our way through their friends, I told him, I love you. I came home to Baltimore changed, less angry, less certain, and more open to possibility. I didn't get a chance to attend his funeral. He died a few months later. But I wish I had. And if I did, I would have really liked to have given his eulogy, because it would have been just one word. Phew! Thank you.